I want you to think about that statement in front of you. Sin is not complicated. Sin is not complicated. Now, there are some things that doesn't mean. It doesn't mean that sin is easy to avoid. It doesn't mean there aren't lots and lots of sins out there. It doesn't mean that sin is always easy to see for what it is. And it doesn't mean that sometimes sin doesn't come into our life and make a real big mess and make things complicated. It just means that sin itself is not complicated. And I think we could probably see that in a couple of different ways. For one way, sin can kind of be narrowed down to just a few things. We see that in 1 John chapter 1. 1 John chapter 1, or rather verse 2 and verse 16. John there, talking about sin, reduces it down to just three different things. It has something to do with either the lust of the flesh, or the lust of the eyes, or the pride of life. Every possible sin that you could think of would fall under one of those. But there's also a sense in which sin is not complicated. Not that you can just reduce it down to a few things. As a matter of fact, in a few minutes, we'll reduce it down even further than this. But it's also not complicated in that it works today the same way that it has always worked. The way that sin works has never changed. Think about the passage that was just read from Genesis chapter 3. That's the very beginning of humanity. That's the first time that we see sin in the Bible. And we see that conversation with Eve and Satan unfolding. And it was very clear that Eve knew the rules. She knew the law. So what was it that caused her to go against God? I think I have a slide out of order here. Let me go back to that verse 6 of Genesis chapter 3 because it explains to us what was it that caused her to go against God. Well, it was the very things that verse 6 says. There was an appeal to human desire. An appeal to human desires. She saw that the tree was good for food. There's an appeal to the physical body there, isn't there? And it was a delight to the eyes. In other words, this looks intriguing. Something about this says, look into this a little bit more. And then it was this appeal to pride or an appeal to the ego. Because there's something about this that will elevate who I am. It'll give me a greater sense of value or of self-importance. Do you see how sin is not complicated? Because here we are today, thousands of years later, and from what we read in Genesis chapter 3 about how sin works, is still the very same way that sin works today. I think we see a few things happening in Genesis chapter 3. I don't think it took mankind all that long to go against God. But I also think it was pretty easy for Satan to figure out, how do I get men to go against God? That's his whole goal. You realize that. It is to get us to go against God. And I think he learned pretty quick how I can get people to do that. All I have to do is put something out there that appeals to their desires. Maybe it appeals to their flesh or to their eyes or to their ego. And if I can put that out there, I can get people to go against God. And in all this time, Satan hasn't had to change that. Sin is not complicated in the fact that for thousands of years, his tactics have been the same. Now, over time, how sin comes into our lives, that changes. And maybe what some particular sins look like, that changes. And our exposure to sin, sometimes that changes. Or our access to sin, that has changed over time. Just think about the avenues of sin that have been opened up because of technology. But even with that, sin has always just been about an appeal to something that either... To something that either makes us feel good, feel important, or to get something we don't have. Do you see how we're kind of narrowing down sin? It's not that complicated. It's always been about an appeal to something that makes us feel good, feel important, or to get something that we don't have. So we're going to spend a little bit of time working with those desires that John talks about, the desires of the flesh and the eyes and the pride of life, and then we'll end with some answers to that. Now, I've already mentioned that just because sin is not complicated doesn't mean that it's easy. As a matter of fact, the first thing that we read about Satan is he's what? He's crafty. He's good at doing what he does. And I think one of the ways that he's so good is that he uses good things and uses those against us in a bad way. I don't think it's all that hard for us to see why sin sometimes is so easy for us to fall in. It's because Satan's using something that's good, but he's turning it against us in some way. Think about sexual desire. That is a very natural desire. That is a God-given desire. And it is not wrong for us to fulfill sexual desires as long as what? As long as we fulfill them in the way that God says, here's a way to fulfill that. And in that case, God says, you are free to fulfill that desire with the person that you've been joined to in marriage. But what Satan does, though, is he tries to get us to fulfill those kinds of desires in any way possible. Jacob preached about Satan's tactics recently. And lying, that's it. That's his tactic. He's the king. He's the father of liars. He deceives in lots of ways. And I think in this lust of the flesh, I think that's where he does a lot of his work. I think that's where he does a lot of his lying and deceiving. See, I think he convinces us that if we have a desire, then you deserve to have that desire fulfilled, and you deserve to have it fulfilled now. Even if it means doing things that God is not okay with. Do you see what I mean when I say sin is not complicated? I said we could reduce it down. I think you could almost reduce it down to this one thing. It's about my desires becoming more important than following God. If you were going to reduce sin down to one thing, I think that's it. It's about me fulfilling my desires and that becoming more important than following God. And we'll spend just a couple of minutes just talking about how that kind of plays out. That can play out hundreds of ways when we're thinking about the lust of the flesh. Think about an affair. Why does an affair happen? Well, you might say, well, there's a man, he's just chasing sex. Well, maybe that's true. Maybe it's something more than that. Well, what about the woman? Maybe she's just chasing sex. Probably not statistically. She's looking for something more. She's looking for an emotional fulfillment. Maybe her husband is not paying attention to her emotional needs. And maybe some man comes into her life and he starts paying attention to her and he listens to her and he gets her and he understands her. And before long, that turns into something else. But you see the point, either way, whether it started with some physical lust or some emotional lust, the desire to have those fulfilled, when that becomes the most important thing, guess what? No sin is off the table. When getting desires fulfilled, even if they're good desires, God is okay with the sexual desire being fulfilled. God wants, I think, our emotional desires to be able to be fulfilled. But when we start seeking to have our desires fulfilled at all cost, now we're in trouble. Of course, this is definitely not just about sexual stuff. There are all kinds of things that a person might do with their physical body just for the sake of fulfilling some desires. Think about why a person would use drugs or alcohol. Well, that might start by a person just wanting to do what everybody else is doing. Young people, y'all listen up. That's how sin often starts. I think that probably relates to the lust of the eyes. We'll talk more about that in just a minute. But oftentimes, all it takes to entice us to sin is to show us what everybody else is doing. And when I see what everybody else is doing, that's intriguing. There's an appeal to that. And so oftentimes, maybe something like drinking or drugs, it starts right there. But you know what that often turns into? What that often turns into is a desire that gratifies the flesh in some way. For some people, it just makes them really happy and it turns into this fun, euphoric experience. Other people, they start turning to it to cope with life, to get a break from reality. But either way, do you see what's happened there? There's a desire related to the flesh that's compelling a person to do that. It's all either about feeling good or finding a way to feel better. And we could probably go on and on and on, but you get the point. It is not hard to see how the desires of the flesh work against us when it comes to sin. Maybe it's emotional, maybe it's sexual, maybe it's just wanting to feel good in some way. But there's also not just the gratification of the flesh. John mentions the lust of the eyes. I've already said something about that. Oftentimes those are connected. I think Jesus helps us see that. You remember when Jesus says men don't need to look on women or look at women in a sexual way. And why does he say that? Because here's what we know to be true, that if a man in that case sees something enticing and he doesn't immediately allow his mind to go somewhere else and start thinking about something else, guess what's created there? There's a desire that is created there, and before long, if that desire gets high enough, guess what a man will do? He will seek to have that desire fulfilled, even if that means I'm no longer following God. Now, when we hear the words lust, as we do in 1 John 2, we hear lust of the flesh and lust of the eyes, we typically think about sexual stuff, right? Because that's lust and sex are so equally, or so closely combined together. So often that you can't separate them. But the lust of the eyes is way more than just some sexual thing. The lust of the eyes is really just being captivated by something, and then we start chasing it. And think about how that might play out in everyday life. Maybe it's the lifestyle of another person. Maybe what we do is we see a lifestyle and we want that lifestyle. We want to be who they are, or we want to have what they have. And I think in our world of social media, that's probably heightened a lot. Because it just gives us a window into so many lives of people all around the world. I was recently watching something that exposed how very often what we see online, social media specifically, how fake it is. Now, I'm probably not surprising you by telling you lots of stuff you see on the internet's not real, but a lot of stuff you see on the internet is not real. But it was exposing how people will just give the appearance of having this really cool life. They give the appearance that they have the lifestyle of the rich and famous. And because the lust of the eyes is a very real thing, guess what people do? Well, they will start following these people online, whatever social media platform it is. They'll start getting followers because now this person's got a pretty envious life. Everybody wants to see where they're at or what they're doing next. And so people just build up this massive amount of followers online. That's called an influencer. And you today, if you want to, you can be a social media influencer. We think about people growing up and you ask them what they want to be. What do you want to be when you grow up? Some people say, oh, I want to be a teacher. I want to be a stay-at-home mom. I want to be a doctor. I want to be a lawyer. Today, you start asking that question and you're going to get some young people to tell you, I want to be a social media influencer when I grow up. That is a real thing. And all you have to do to be able to become an influencer is you have to be able to at least give the appearance of having some pretty cool lifestyle. And if you can create that appearance, then all these companies, you get enough followers, they're going to start giving you all kinds of swag. That's just cool stuff. But they're going to give you all this cool stuff if you'll just show the world, you wear our stuff, you wear our makeup, you like our jewelry, you like our shoes, you like our perfume. They start doing that because they know what? Lots of people look to this person. And if this person wears that, then I want to wear that. Now, I understand that's how advertising has always worked. There's a reason why Nike wanted Michael Jordan to wear their shoes. Because if Michael Jordan's wearing their shoes, I want to wear those shoes. I like to play basketball, and I'll just tell you, I put on those Jordans and I can play a lot more like him. But that's how advertising works. But used to be an influencer, you had to actually have some kind of talent. There's a reason Michael Jordan is an influencer. It's because I can see him play basketball the way that he did. You used to have some kind of talent, or maybe it was something related to education, or you had to have made a name for yourself in the political world, in the business world. But today, if you want to be an influencer, you don't even have to have talent. You just have to have enough know-how to build up a following. And that gets pretty easy. I don't know if you know this. I'm going to blow the minds of some people here. But you can actually buy followers. You take TikTok or Instagram or whatever your social media flavor is. You can create a profile and you can go buy followers. Did y'all know that? You can buy people to follow you. I guess that works on Facebook too. There are companies who will just swipe pictures off the internet. Our picture is probably somewhere out in the world of the internet with another name under it. And it appears to be a real person. Now, if you really, you want something more than just followers, you can actually pay companies to give you fake comments and fake likes. I understand if you're not a social media user, I'm losing you here. I'll bring it back in a minute. But that's the world that we're living in, where I can create a profile, and for a little bit of money, I can get lots of people who follow me, and they like my stuff, and they share my stuff. And then before you know it, more followers just means more followers. You see how that works. But you see how fake it is. Now here's where I'm really going to blow your mind. Are you aware that if you wanted to start staging pictures to look cool, that you can take a toilet seat and give the appearance that you're flying somewhere on an airplane? Has anybody heard this? All right, I knew people were going to think I'm crazy. I see the looks. That's why you always have pictures. Here's a man right here in this picture, and you put the toilet seat just right and you get a background behind you. And this is easier if you have a friend to help you so that he can get the angle just right. And now you just give the appearance that you're flying somewhere. And it's up to your imagination to where you're going. Now, up here in the top left is a little kiddie pool. They're going to make that staged into some really cool, it's really a headshot, but it's just a kiddie pool in somebody's backyard. And here's a young man right here, and he's on his private jet. Except for, guess what? This is someplace in California, and for a few bucks you can walk in, and it's just kind of a shell of an old airplane, and you can sit down and they'll take your picture, and it looks like you're on your private jet. And this picture here, maybe you can see it with enough clarity. Those people look a little bit different from one picture to the next, don't they? And you know what that is? It's just a filter. They didn't have to stop and put on makeup or fix their hair or anything. They didn't go get a tan. It's just a filter. You see where that's going? Let me try to bring all of this back in. I know for most of us, this is pretty far-fetched stuff. I hope it is. I hope nobody here is interested in trying to amass a large following so people follow your fake life. But here's what I want you to see in all of that. Sometimes our desires just get put on the wrong thing. And remember, that's the root of all sin. Think about how that works in the scenario here of social media. Some people's desire to be wealthy and to be popular and to make a name for themselves, some people's desire for that is so strong, they're willing to make up a fake life just to have it. And there are some people who have such a lust of the eyes that they're willing to follow those people just because within, I think, all of us, there is a tendency to want what other people have. Think about that for a minute. There is a tendency in humanity to want what other people have. You don't look to the people below you that don't have all the stuff that you have. You look to all the people who have what you want. The people who have more. And if you and I aren't careful, that infatuation to have the life of other people starts taking over, and then it's only a matter of time until what? Having my desires fulfilled becomes more important than following God. And so in a culture like we're living in today, where all of this is very real stuff, what you and I have to guard against is misplaced desires. And maybe what that does is it gives way to the pride of life category. You know what pride really does? It just redefines who we are and what we're all about. And maybe that causes us to start chasing money or popularity or power. But when we do that, guess what we've done? We've shifted our focus, and now our focus is on something entirely different than it should be. Our focus is now all about me. It's all about who I am. It's about all about what I can have. It's all about what other people think of me. And we've lost the concept of using life to honor God. We've lost the concept of to live is Christ. Do you see how easily Satan can work with the desires of the body? How easily he can work with the ego and get that to be more important than following God. I want you to open your Bibles to Matthew chapter 6. A couple of verses there. Matthew chapter 6, it's part of the Sermon on the Mount. And at the beginning of the chapter, Jesus, I think, speaks to this pride thing. Because what he says is there are people who are actually doing religious things. There are people who are praying and they're fasting and they're giving. But they're doing it for the wrong reason. It's related to pride. Because they're just doing that in such a way that people will say, oh, look at them. Look how generous they are. Or look how spiritual they are. That's what they're doing it for. And so Jesus starts off by exposing some people who are really just operating from a pride or an ego standpoint. And after exposing that, he says something that I think is incredibly important for 21st century American Christians to listen to. Notice what he says in Matthew chapter 6, beginning in verse 19. After having exposed the whole pride thing, he says, don't store up for yourselves treasures on earth where moth and rust destroy and where thieves break in and steal, but store up for yourselves treasures in heaven where neither moth nor rust destroys and where thieves do not break in or steal. For where your treasure is, there your heart will be also. Do you see Jesus saying, don't let your desires for the stuff down here, don't let those redefine what's important. Don't be making life all about the stuff. Whether it's the physical gratification or whether it's the ego stuff, don't make life all about the stuff. Why? Because the stuff won't last. It doesn't matter what kind of value you think it has now. One day it won't have any value. And so don't let your affections be about that stuff. And then in verse 24, he says, no one can serve two masters, for either he'll hate the one and love the other, or he'll be devoted to one and despise the other. You cannot serve God and wealth. I think that's another lie that Satan tells us all the time. I think he convinces us that I can have a strong affection for the things of the world, and I can also be serving God faithfully at the same time. And Jesus says you can't do that. Jesus says you got to pick. Is it going to be all about the things that gratify the flesh? Is it going to be about getting all the things that appeal to the eye? Is it going to be about all the things that appeal to the ego? Or is it going to be about me? That's the question that we have to get to the bottom of. Now, I've covered just a small fraction of how those desires actually work against us and take us away from God. But here's what I want to put in your mind. If sin is not that complicated, is it possible that maybe there's an answer for it that's not all that complicated either? And here's what I think the answer to it is. Is it worth my soul? When we're thinking about fulfilling desires, here's the question that helps us conquer that. Is it worth my soul? If you really wanted to simplify everything down to one question, I think this is it. If you want to carry one question with you all the time, this is the question to carry with you. Is it worth my soul? Very quickly, think about how you could use this in some of those scenarios that I mentioned earlier. If you are unmarried and you're having a temptation to fulfill sexual desires, ask yourself this question. Is it worth my soul? If you're a married person and you're starting to look outside of your marriage to have some need met or some desire fulfilled, ask yourself this question. Is it worth my soul? If you are tempted to watch pornography in the very minute when you're about to start clicking buttons, ask yourself this question. Is it worth my soul? If you're wanting to turn to alcohol, you're wanting to turn to drugs, you're wanting to, in the heat of the moment, just fit in with what everybody else is doing, ask yourself this question, is it worth my soul? Do you see how that question can, in a moment, how it can turn us in a better direction? Now, depending on what you're dealing with, and depending on how strong that desire is, you might have to go through that scenario hundreds of times. But if in this moment, in the moment where that temptation is strong, this question very well might prevent you from allowing your desires to become more important than God. Do you see that? All I wanted to do is win the battle in the moment. And the real battle on the line is, am I going to allow my desires to be more important than following God? Do you see how this one question helps us win that battle in that moment? Now, that's heat of the moment stuff. I think there's a lot more to think about than just what happens in the heat of the moment. And so we can work this question in those ways too. Think about your ambitions in life. Now, this requires more thought. This requires more contemplation. This kind of thing requires me to sit down on a pretty regular basis and just think about what's life all about? What am I really focusing on? What am I really hoping to accomplish in this life? What things are most important to me? Think about the decisions you make. Think about the way you spend your time. Think about the way you spend your money. I will tell you, you want to know what your real passion in life is, figure out what you spend time on, figure out what you spend money on, and that's going to be the answer to your question. Where's all my time going? Where's all my energy going? Where's my money going? That will tell you what your real passion in life is. And if our passion is something earthly, then just employ the question, is it worth my soul? If I get all of these things I'm chasing after, is it worth it? Maybe it's a big decision coming up. Maybe it's a new job. Maybe it's a move. Well, sometimes those might be completely neutral. It might be completely innocent, but here's a time where you can employ the question, what's driving this decision? Is it a healthy desire or is it a misplaced desire? And if you come to the conclusion, I'm wanting to do that and that's a misplaced desire, then just ask the question, is it worth my soul? That's how it works on the bigger picture. If having all the stuff, you remember the stuff that we see that we're drawn to have because everybody else has it? If all of that puts me under crushing debt, is it worth it? And somebody might say, well, how is having debt, how's that going to make me lose my soul? Well, it may not. I guess it depends on what the debt's all about. Oftentimes, though, debt is a real picture of what a person's life has become all about. When our desires shift our focus, that's when we have to start asking the question, is it worth my soul? Well, we all know the answer to the question, don't we? Jesus answers that question for us because Jesus says, even if you were to gain the whole world, it's not worth it if it costs you your soul. Just past 1 John 2:16, the very next verse, John, after talking about the stuff of the world, he says, the world is passing away. The lust of the world, they're passing away. But the one who does the will of God lasts forever. John answers the question for us. If it has to do with the desires of this world, the desires of this body, is it worth it? The answer is no. But here's what we also know. Intellectually, it is one thing to know something intellectually. It's another thing to follow what we know to be true. Because sometimes feelings and emotions override intellect. Sometimes feelings and emotions override intellect. And that's why I think that one big question is a good question to always be close by. I might even suggest that if you're here this morning and you're struggling a lot with some matter of desire, and you see in your life the desires of your body becoming more important than God, I might suggest you just take a piece of paper or something and write that down. Is it worth my soul? And stick it in your pocket. And keep that question close to you. Maybe though, as you're listening to this morning, you're recognizing there is some desire in life, and me fulfilling that desire is becoming way too important. Maybe you need to take that misplaced desire and do something with it. And so I challenge you to do that. And if you need help with that, then let us know. There may be somebody here this morning who knows that at some point, I need to get right with God. And maybe that's your intention. That one day, I'm going to get right with God. Here's the question I want you contemplating right now, though. If that delay costs me my soul, is it worth it? Somebody here is delaying giving their life to God. Somebody is delaying denying myself so that I can be a follower of Jesus. And the question that you need to be wrestling with really hard is, if that delay costs me my soul, is it worth it? And you know the answer to that. And so if you are listening to this and you recognize that for whatever reason your life is not right with God, whatever it is that's keeping you from God is not worth your soul. And I hope you'll do something about that now. And if we can help you with that, you let us know. Let's stand and sing.
There is a fountain filled with blood on earth.